We have Chuck coming up with In the Margin in just a couple of moments. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for all the IMs and the contacts and so forth.
The local band, the Cello Chicks, from their 2008 CD, Under the Covers, they did Stevie Wonder's I Wish. And I wish I may, I wish I might, I wish I might have Howard Finstall here tonight. But he's not. And it's just about a week ago from this very hour that he's moved on to the spirit world. There's been lots of eulogies in the community media and in print media and on the web. So I'm going to add one more tribute to the great Howard Zinn. I have lots of personal recordings I've done of him over the years and compiled a few of them, and some mixed with music and some interviews he's done on other community programs. So that's what we'll be looking at for most of the show today. And we'll start off with some comments that Howard made in November of 2008, 4 days after the election. He was at an event for Sacco and Vanzetti, and during the question period, I asked him to comment on the recent election of Barack Obama. So let's hear what he has to say about that, and we'll hear lots of other things, too, here at WMBR in Cambridge.
Yeah, I didn't notice that. I noticed that there's something in the news about the election of Obama. I must tell you, I was elated at the election of Obama. Elated. Now you say, how can an anarchist be elated at any election? But an anarchist, I'm talking about myself now as an anarchist, because I adapt to whatever crowd I'm in. and actually, when people, sometimes people want to label me. People always want to label you, right? People approach me with a certain look, say, what are you? Are you a Marxist? Are you this? Are you that? Are you a socialist? So I say, this is really what I tell them. I hope you don't hold this against me. I say, well, I'm something of a Marxist, something of a socialist, something of an anarchist. I just draw from whatever I think makes sense. So being something of an anarchist, anarchists don't have much faith in elections, with good reason. And we, although I was elated, really elated, that Obama won over McCain. One, there are reasons for me to be elated. And two, there are reasons for me to stop after my initial reaction and say, now wait a while. What does this mean? How significant is this? And is, you know, is this time for just continued self-congratulation or for something else? No, I'm elated because the election of Obama has a certain meaning. It doesn't mean that we're going to have a new world. It doesn't mean that this means we're solving our problems. No, it doesn't mean that. But it means that the American people in the last 30 or 40 years have moved enough away from the racism that has always pervaded this society. They moved enough away from it for enough white people, and you know, a lot of people, white people voted for Obama, he wouldn't have made it, for enough white people to move away from that racist heritage and vote for a black man, or at least a half black man, which is just as good. Yeah, he has an all black wife. And, well, you know, this whole business of black and white is so ridiculous, of course. We know that. Having lived and taught in a black community in the South, one of the things that strikes you when you live among and teach among black people is black. They're all different colors, the whole gradation. And then you look around at white people. White people are not white. They're all different grades of yellow and gray and pink and tan. And nobody's really white. If somebody was white, you'd turn them in. You know. It's a good sign that Obama was elected. Anarchists, and that part of me which is an anarchist, and that part of me which is a historian also, and which looks at elections and how important elections are, says our fate does not really depend on who is sitting in the White House. Our fate depends on who is sitting outside the White House. Who is picketing the White House, you see. You know. But Obama, understanding the important changes that have taken place in this country, the steps towards social justice, they're only steps. The end of slavery and the end of the segregation signs in the South, and the end of the Vietnam War, and the rise of a women's movement and of a gay and lesbian movement and disabled people's movement. These things, they did not come through the initiative of the president or Congress or a constitutional amendment or the Supreme Court. They came out of the actions of ordinary people. They came out of citizens' actions, you know. They came out of what anarchists call direct action. Direct action against the source of your oppression. That's how change takes place, not because of the president or Congress. But we can't ignore the fact that there are certain constellations, certain combinations of power at the top, which are a little more receptive to social movements than others. There's some political leaders who are more open to the possibility of change than others, just as Roosevelt was more open to the pressure of the strikes and the rent agitators and the unemployed councils. He was more sensitive to that than Herbert Hoover was. So I feel that Obama is more sensitive, partly because he's black, but there are signs that he will be more sensitive. There's signs that with Obama, there's an opening for citizens to rush into, and for the energy. He evoked a lot of energy out of especially young people. And the energy that may have been not misplaced, but enthusiasm that might have been mistaken by people who think that, oh, if we only elect him, everything will be okay. But still, there was that enthusiasm and that energy. And if that enthusiasm and that energy, that expectation that people had of him, which so far he hasn't actually shown that he will fulfill, but if that expectation then continues as he becomes president, and if people, all that energy rushes into that opening, that little opening that has been created by this election, well, then we will face the possibility of a great new social movement in this country. That will be the thing that will bring about change, not just the election.
Howard Zinn speaking in Cambridge on November 2008.
like a Jefferson, Lincoln, Dylan, and Howard Zinn, and Crazy Horse, Bread and Life. Children want Bread and Life. Children trying to hang on till the water rises. Hang on till the bread can rise. The resurrection happens every day. Someone finds the love to pray. The resurrection happens every day. Someone finds the love to say. My soul can't keep on. My soul can't be bought. My soul can't be bought.
Democracy is for people to think independently, to be skeptical of government, to check up for themselves, to look around and try to find out what's going on. And then, if they see that the government is deceiving them, to speak out as loudly as they can. That's democracy.
Pearl Jam there with their song Down, which references Howard Zinn and Howard Zinn's autobiography, You Can't Be Neutral on a Moving Train. That came from their album Lost Dogs, which I think came out in 2003 or 2004. Thanks go out to Ed Buchard of Tears of the God. He played that song on his show last night, calling to my attention. He's got a show up at WMFO, a sister station up there at Tufts University. And also, I guess, a shout-out to another person who does a show up there, Belinda of Bubbles in the Think Tank, because she's the one who turned me on to the Howard Zinn song, a song that's called Howard Zinn. And that was by Dan Smola from his album Under the Rainbow. And in between and around that, we heard comments from Howard Zinn, a little drop-in from 2001 as we were gearing up for the invasion in Iraq. There was an anti-war teaching conference at Mass Art, and that's why Howard made that comment about democracy and speaking up. And a longer comment about Obama just after he was elected and before he became president. But we'll hear some more comments from Howard a little later on about what he thinks of Obama after he became president. And we also heard from Alice Coltrane as the backing music for that part of Howard Zinn's comments on Obama. Backing music right now is provided by Sirkestra, local band, Circus Jazz. They're playing tonight up at Johnny D's, and this is the title song from their CD, Alice, which came out, I think, in 2008. And what I have coming up next is some comments from Barry Crimmins. He was a guest of Dave Goodman and Mark Stern's on Radio with a View this past Sunday morning. And he had some eloquent things to say about Howard. So let's hear that now here on WMBR in Cambridge.
In any case, whatever it does happen, you know, the crowd is growing. For among other reasons, because, you know, in this late stage capitalism we're in, they're running out of people to screw over, which means they've already screwed over a lot of people. And from that group of people, there's a lot of empty pockets, open ears. And so we're heading into a period of very open ears. So I think what we need to do is we need to listen to just how Howard approached people. Mm-hmm. The humanity with which he approached them, the kindness and the wit and the preparedness, the hard work he did to figure out exactly, you know, what instance of history to cite to incite us to do good. And we take advantage of that. We carry on in his name. That's, you know, what I plan to do. And I know everyone who knew him will do that in some way. We can really, really demonstrate the impact. Because, you know, that one of the great moments in history was when Howard Zinn started typing or writing with a pen or whatever, started writing bottom-up history. Because a lot of people can, you know, any sap can sort of wander into the wrong place and make history. But very few people can change it. Howard Zinn changed history, changed how what history is. And he gave it, not only did he change it, but he reclaimed it, you know? Mm-hmm. He reclaimed it, and he offered us the opportunity to reclaim it and take history back. Because history should be the collective truth, you know? And it hasn't been. It's been the front story for the, you know, the oppressors for far too long.
Barry Crimmins speaking this past Sunday on Radio with a View about Howard Zinn and what he meant to him and what he meant to a lot of us. We'll turn now to more comments from Howard, comments he made along with Amy Goodman when they both appeared here on Patriots Day in 2006. They were in Faneuil Hall on Patriots Day of 2006, and Howard was elated to be there on such a day. So let's hear some comments from Howard from Patriots Day at Faneuil Hall.
So many of you know Faneuil Hall is a historic spot. It goes back before the American Revolution. All sorts of meetings took place here. It's a proper place for us and Democracy Now! to gather, because so many acts of protest were launched here. Abolitionists met here and planned the rescue of fugitive slaves here in Boston from the slave catchers of the Fugitive Slave Act. So, yeah, it's only right that we meet here, and we meet here on Patriots Day, on Marathon Day, on Red Sox Day. And so, and how many of you heard our morning broadcast with Amy and me and Noam Chomsky? Yeah, that was a formidable group. But we talked a little about patriotism, and so I guess I want to talk about that and about who are patriots and who are not, and you know, starting with the idea of what patriotism is and what it isn't, because there's so much distortion of the idea of patriotism. Almost everybody here who has uttered a word of criticism of American government policy has been accused of being unpatriotic. So it's very important to get very clear that patriotism does not mean that you support the government on whatever it does. In fact, patriotism means the opposite, that not that you oppose the government in everything it does. You know, we can find a few things that the government does right. It's more in the past than in the present. Really, more in the past. More and more in the legislation of the 30s and the 60s. More in the Social Security Act and unemployment insurance. And more in the civil rights legislation. No. And more in Medicare and Medicaid. More when the government was reacting to enormous social movements in this country, and the labor movement and the strikes of the 1930s and the great movements in the South and all over the country, and the women's movement and the gay and lesbian movement and the disabled people's movement, when the government was responding to these movements, then we have moments of government doing good and government being patriotic. But it's very important to distinguish between the government and the people. Very important to distinguish between the government and the country. And sometimes you hear, you watch on television, a television reporter goes over to a young person, a young guy who's about to go over to Iraq, and they say, "Why are you going?" He says, "I need to fight for my country." I always get a sinking feeling when I hear that, because I know that, no, he's not going there to fight for his country. He's been deluded, as so many people in this country have been deluded, about the confusion between the government and the country.
Oh, say can you see why you should vote for me? Corporations, there's the oil company and the military and the World Bank's plan for global domination. Partnership of media and industry make my place in the polls and a rich man of me.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the multinational corporations and to the profit for which they stand, one interlocking directorate under no government, indivisible, with monopoly and cheap labor for all.
Yeah, the elite Utah Phillips there with his thing called Stupid Pledge from his album I Have a Right to Know. And before that, Sam Sarah with their I guess it's a cover of the Star Spangled Banner, that they call it Star Spangled Dollar, and how the corporations are going to have influence in our elections, but they did that several years ago, way before the current Supreme Court decision. It sounds like they might have just done it last week, because it seems to have more relevance now than it did even back when they did it. And Barry Crimmins, some comments about Howard Zinn, and we also heard from Howard Zinn speaking on Patriots Day in 2006, at an event that he and Amy Goodman did there at Faneuil Hall. I'm Chuck, and this is In the Margin, a special edition looking back at some of the life and some of the comments of Howard Zinn in music and in his words and other people's words and other influences that he provided for people. A little while ago we heard his comments on Obama when Obama was president-elect. He certainly had things to say about Obama since Obama's been elected. And what we'll do now is hear some of those comments that he made on Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman back in May of this year. That's coming up next here at WMBR in Cambridge.
Howard Zinn was a frequent guest on Democracy Now! He last joined us at our old Firehouse studio in May. At that time, I asked him for his assessment of President Obama.
I wish President Obama would listen carefully to Martin Luther King. I'm sure he pays verbal homage, as everyone does, to Martin Luther King. But he ought to think before he sends missiles over Pakistan, before he agrees to this bloated military budget, before he sends troops to Afghanistan, before he opposes the single-payer system, which you talked about earlier in your program. He ought to ask, what would Martin Luther King do, and what would Martin Luther King say? And if he only listened to King, he would be a very different president than he's turning out to be so far. I think we ought to hold Obama to his promise to be different and bold and to make change. So far, he hasn't come through on that promise.
Barack Obama was running for president, asked in the debates, who would MLK endorse, who would Dr. King endorse, he said, none of us.
Yeah, that's true. Because King believed, and this actually is one of the themes of our people's history, is that you cannot depend on presidents. And you cannot depend on elections and voting to solve your problems. People themselves organizing, demonstrating, clamoring, they are the only ones who can push the president and push Congress into change. And that's what we have to do now with Obama. We have to point to what Obama said in the course of the campaign when he said, we not only have to get out of Iraq, we have to get out of the mindset that brought us into Iraq. Obama himself has not gotten out of that mindset yet, and I think we the people have to speak to him about that.
How?
These people that I saw on your program earlier who were demonstrating for the single-payer health system, which Obama is very, very reluctant to endorse, they were doing what needs to be done. They were committing acts of civil disobedience. They were going, into offices where they were told to leave and they wouldn't leave. They were doing what we were doing during the movement against the war in Vietnam. They were doing what the black movement was doing in the South. And this is what we will need. We will need demonstrative acts which dramatize the fact that our government is not responding to what the people need and what the people want.
I knew that I could never again raise my voice against the violence of the oppressed in the ghettos without having first spoken clearly to the greatest purveyor of violence in the world today, my own government.
Obama, post-imperial? According to a think piece in a recent edition of Newsweek, President Barack Obama is a post-imperial leader who seeks to bring balance to foreign affairs and a kind of disciplined realism to interactions with other nations. of the similarities between the dreaded example of Vietnam and Afghanistan. The analogy fails because, unlike the faithful Ghiem brothers, Afghan leader Hamid Karzai was elected and had significant support. The analogy is about as weak as wet toilet tissue. To say Karzai was elected is to do great violence to that word. A recent piece in the Washington Post describes the Taliban as a virtual shadow government throughout most of the country, meaning local governors, police chiefs, taxes, and governments. Indeed, in the Post report, Taliban control, quote, broad swaths of the country, especially Afghanistan's vast rural areas, unquote. That's because in these districts, the U.S.-supported Karzai regime has no presence. Back to the point, a corrupt, foreign-supported government, which is widely seen as a puppet regime? Sound familiar? Do we have another Vietnam? Perhaps. The imperial press painted Vietnam in rosy colors until the walls came tumbling down. They almost universally praised the Afghanistan and Iraq wars as righteous retribution. Why should they stop now? As for post-imperial, this is a label about as ridiculous as post-racial. To invade countries that did nothing to it, to bomb and kill tens of thousands, to occupy and install puppets, is the very stuff of empire. And to add 30,000 troops in support is surely a part. Post-imperial? Hardly. From Death Row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
And this is WMBR in Cambridge. I'm Chuck with In the Green Margin, doing a slightly different program than is normally heard in this time slot. It's usually more of a music and montage program. Well, we're certainly having a fair amount of music and montaging it at that, along with a lot of spoken word, and particularly a lot of spoken word by Howard Zinn, though not strictly leaving it just to Howard Zinn, as we just heard there from Mumia Abu-Jamal on his comments on Obama. Prior to that, we heard Howard Zinn speaking on Democracy Now!, originally back in May, but was rebroadcast this past week, assessing Obama, along with Amy Goodman. And one of the things that Howard Zinn said was that Obama should really listen to the words of Dr. King. So we had a little drop-in of Dr. King in there as well, talking about the violence of the U.S. government.